Welcome to Amongst the Waves. I'm your host, Tanya Carroll, and I'm a surf coach, a Czech practitioner, and I'm completely caught up in all things surfing and getting behind the scenes of surfing culture. I have surrendered my soul to surfing. In each of the episodes of Amongst the Waves, I will bring you a perspective you might not have considered in the hope that it inspires you to be a better human and that it helps to build your stoke. My guest on today's episode is Gillian Grove. As one of only a handful of female surfboard shapers worldwide, Gillian Grove became obsessed with board design when she bought a new longboard that was harder to surf than her shortboard. Her journey into understanding why that board was so difficult to ride eventually landed her in the shaping bay of veteran shaper Richard Harvey on the Gold Coast, Queensland. It was here that Gillian's personal surfing journey took a sharp leap into the unknown, and where she began to understand that length, width, and thickness were far from the factors that make up the dynamics of a surfboard. Taking to the hand tools herself to commence a lifelong journey, learning journey, Jill is passionate about educating as many people as possible around how to find the right board, believing that the right board can make you a better surfer just as much as the wrong board can actually make you a worse surfer. Jill shapes under the brand Shape by She on the Gold Coast, Queensland, and can be found surfing a variety of East Coast point breaks on any surfable morning. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. Today I have with me Gillian Grove. Hi, Jill, how are you?
Hello, good, thank you.
I came across you, I think, through Her Wave on Surfing New South Wales's page. How long have you been surfing?
I started surfing when I was quite young. I had a brother who was sponsored and heavily into surfing and in Sydney's northern beaches. So I think I took up surfing, I must have been about 10 or 11 when I first got on a surfboard. And then I surfed for a couple of years and I had quite a serious accident and took a friend's surfboard to my face and caught 12 stitches, you know, harsh lesson early on.
Wow. How old were you when that happened?
About 12 or 13. So yeah, I think I started surfing about 10 or 11, and about 12 or 13, I was in those early years of high school. I was actually teaching another girl how to surf. We were just messing around in shore and she stood up in flat water and said, "Oh, Jill, look." And I turned around and the board smacked straight into my face. So yeah, I went to hospital. I took 12 stitches, got this whopping great scar on my face. So that sort of put a little bit of a dent in my surfing, and in, I guess, your confidence just takes a
minute. I was going to say, yeah. Did you get frightened by that?
Oh, 100%. Like, I got straight back on the board, but there's something that you lose. Like, surfing requires a fair bit of an edge to you. So, you know, you can't really go half-hearted at surfing. You've got to go all in, or
literally.
You sort of got to throw yourself into it, and there, I guess, somewhat of an edge got lost, but I continued surfing. You know, we moved up to the Gold Coast and I joined a girls, they were just starting girls surfing teams on the Gold Coast at school, so surfing had just been introduced into sport there. And so I sort of went back into surfing then, and then I had a massive break for years and years, and I came back to it about 8 or 9 years ago. So
right, where on the Gold Coast were you, like, what school?
I was up at Coomba Bar High, so you know it's
a little bit north of the Gold Coast.
Yeah, sort of the northern end of the Gold Coast. I didn't live near a beach at that time, although we surfed South Stradley a lot when I was younger. We all had, but we lived on canals and we all had boats, so, well, you know, when I say we, it was mostly me and 12 boys. So
wow. There
wasn't a lot of women around surfing. Even when I started back in Sydney, I think I knew of maybe three other female surfers when I was younger. That's why I was sort of trying to rope my friends into it. Didn't do very well with that. women's surfing was sort of there, but yeah, not there. And then in the early sort of 90s, late 80s was when I was on the Gold Coast, and it was just sort of starting to take off.
Yeah, that's actually when I lived on the Gold Coast. I lived there after I got married when I was 20. So I lived in Arundel.
Ah, okay.
But my husband was into the jet skiing, and prior to that I grew up in Canberra and lived landlocked in Canberra, but we used to go down to the South Coast or the Sapphire Coast and surfed at Tatha and my brother surfed, but, and I've said this before on my podcast, I didn't surf because one, I was scared of the fish in the water, but also scared of the boys, or didn't see myself as a surfer because I didn't know anyone who was a female surfer. It was just all the boys went out and surfed. We sat on the beach and looked after the towels.
Yeah. We had, it's a pretty strong surfing culture there on the Northern Beaches. You know, it's a real hub. My brother was a super strong surfer. He was sponsored and just a phenomenal group of locals we'd all kind of grown up with. And yeah, I just sort of looked at it. I was a pretty big tomboy as a kid. Like I've got an older sister and an older brother. I never looked to my sister. I always looked to my brother. What he was doing always seemed like heaps more fun.
Yeah.
And the surfing, our house was kind of a gateway to the beach. So, you know, there was always 20 to 30 boards packed in the outdoor shower. There were people constantly, you know, walking through our house to get down to the beach. We had, you know, I can remember being super young and people ringing up and saying, what's a surf like?
You were the broadcaster.
We were out on the ocean. Yeah. And calling up trying to get a surf report. Like I was six. We had this household which would just sort of revolved around the beach, really strong ocean skills. Like my dad had me in the water when I can remember probably swimming before I was walking. Like we were ocean people, so it seems kind of natural to me looking back now that I got into surfing. But it was scary, and it was that definite you know, I got a bit of a hall pass because I had my brother who was such a renowned surfer in the area. So, you know, I can remember the locals sort of going, oh, who's that chick? And some, and generally people going, that's not his sister. So right. It's because of that, I think his sort of, his position, I guess, in the hierarchy.
In the lineup, yeah.
At that local. I don't recall surfing much with him in the water, but I just remember that when I was out there, I felt protected. I knew that there was some sort of status. I got some kind of leeway because I was connected to him.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Did you learn to surf then on a longboard or a shortboard? Because I think in your, like when I was researching for you, you started on a shortboard, then went to longboard eventually. Yeah.
Yeah, like we didn't really like, I don't even recall longboards just even being around. Like it was all the boys that were around were surfing shortboards, and you know, that's sort of what we had. And when I asked my brother, I begged him for that first board, you know, it felt like months, but it probably wasn't that long.
Yeah.
But he finally brought one home. It was $10. It was, I don't know what the measurements were, it was all brown and
heavy, you know, as heavy.
I don't know what it was, but I didn't care. Like I was surfing. I was like, yes, like I can finally get out there. So, you know, I was on that thing as much as I could. So I can remember those sort of, yeah, those early years were just full of shortboarding. I didn't really come across, I didn't even contemplate longboarding until really quite recently.
So when you were not in the water, you said you took a break from it?
Yeah, so I travelled for a lot of years and I became a mum. So, you know, life just gets in the way and, it's hard. I don't know, I can only speak for myself, but as a mum, it's hard to find that time, like, to get into the surf. Wasn't till I think my daughter was a bit older that I was able to sort of contemplate going back in, and I really went back into it. I was looking for something that was going to keep me fit. I don't know what drew me back to the water. So it was like looking for something that was fit and outdoors. Like I can't stand the gym. Like I can't stand anything that's sort of repetitive. And, you know, I'm not good at that.
Yeah.
So I just sort of went looking for something and I went, oh, like surfing, may as well go surfing. So I went back and joined up with a local coach, so at Currumbin on the Gold Coast, Tracy. Yep. And I didn't realise until I hit the water how much that accident had actually sat somewhat buried in my psyche until I got back on a board when I was older. And I can remember paddling out and just sitting and shaking, like shaking out the back, like couldn't have people near me. Like it was, yeah, it was a really big, much bigger than I think what I, what I'd given it credit for was having copped the 13 stitches to the face. I'd sort of held that in some part of my memory.
That gets held in your energetic system in that trauma.
Oh yeah. Like I just hadn't even thought about it. I thought, oh yeah, I'll go back surfing. And then when I got back surfing, I was like, oh, hang on a second. Like there was fear. So, you know, I wasn't really expecting it. So, and I was fine. You know, I sort of got back into it pretty quickly. And at surf schools, you're riding a 9-foot foamy. Like, you know, it's all fairly safe. You're sort of the whitewash warriors for a little while until you get confidence. Then you slowly transition out back and get the green waves. And, you know, I always was, you know, strong in the water and strong at surfing. But, yeah, it took, I can remember Tracy, she was brilliant at it, you know, just paddling me out and just sitting me there. You know,
just being patient, just
being present and being and just sitting with that fear and every fiber in my being just wanting to go in, like sort of had to overcome that that fear. And I don't even think about it anymore.
So during the years that you were away from surfing, you were an art teacher.
I've done lots of things. I traveled a lot. So I sort of went overseas. I lived in Switzerland for some time. Dad worked for Qantas, so we had some status around getting our flights cheaper. So we all traveled. Yeah. So so I spent quite a number of years in hospitality, just flicking in and out. And then about 12 years ago, I've always been creative, and I've always been an artist of some sort. I can sort of put my hands to anything that's creative. So about 12 years ago, I started running my first art lessons to people. And that really exploded quite quickly locally where I live. Yep. And grew into an art school, and then it grew into another art school, and then we started taking people for these awesome art trips overseas. So we took our first group to France. So then we were like, where else can we go? So we went to New Zealand, we went to Greece, we've been to America. So and the art company grew really quite large. So and I still run that today. It's called Artable. So we run weekend workshops and we run art retreats for anyone keen to learn to paint or go somewhere cool and paint with a bunch of cool people. So
absolutely needed right now in our day and age as well.
Oh, totally.
Art therapy.
I always believe that creativity makes you a happier person. So
totally.
And you don't have to be talented, you've just got to be able to jump in and have a go.
How does that marry with what you're doing now, because now you're shaping boards, right?
So I'm not full-time shaping, but I'm still very new to the whole shaping journey, and I'm aware, I actually wasn't aware when I started that how unique it was for a female to step into the bay. I wasn't really thinking about that.
I think that's a great thing.
Yeah, I didn't come till later, and I sort of looked at it and went, oh, actually, there's not many of us. Look, I had started down, as I said, I'd always been a creative person, and I can sort of put my hands to most things, and I'd done a lot of ceramics in the last few years, and that just sort of seemed to cross over really well into the shaping. The skills definitely transfer across.
Was there a moment where you went, I think I want to do this, like shaping, or was it someone who introduced you to it?
So what happened was, there, it's quite an interesting story, and it's got a lot of lessons for everyone out there listening. I went looking to buy a new surfboard, so that's how the whole journey started. Yeah. I went looking to buy a new surfboard, and I just landed in one of the biggest shops in the Gold Coast, big retail, well-branded shop, just thought I'd go in, have a chat, need a new board. I was sort of thinking, I'd been riding a 7.6 and had taken a couple of dings. It was just ready for, an upgrade. And I thought, oh, I might try these longboards. Like, I'm getting older, you know, it seems like they, you know, would be an easier paddle and just a bit of an easier surf. I didn't want to have to fight for my surf anymore. I just wanted to go out, have fun and not really think about it. Because I was traveling a lot, my paddle fitness was going up and down. So, you know, I felt like
something to make it easier and more enjoyable.
More enjoyable. Yeah. I mean, I've always loved my surfing, but yeah, if I would go, you know, 2 or 3 weeks out of the surf, I felt like I had to come back and start again.
Yeah. That paddle fitness kills you, doesn't it?
Yeah. So that sort of time out of the water. And I just kept going through that because I travel for work. I was just going through this constant routine of, you know, getting fitness and then going away. So I went into the surf shop and, you know, there was a young bloke came up to me and, you know, we had quite an extensive chat and I should have kind of known when I walked, now that I know more about longboarding and about shaping in general, I should have known when I walked in and there's 500 shortboards and just one stand of about, you know, 6 longboards.
Longboards, that yeah, that's your choice. Yeah.
I just like, didn't know.
That's a sign.
No. Anyway. We spent ages and I explained to him, I said, look, I'm transitioning. I've surfed a long time, but I'm transitioning off the shortboard. I'm looking for something easier, not getting any younger. Like, had this big conversation and he sold me this board. And I remember saying to him, like, now you're sure this is going to be an easier paddle? Because he said to me, absolutely, it's 9 foot. Now
it's the width though that makes the paddling difference. Yeah,
well, there's a lot of things so that make the paddling different. Not what he sold me. So what happened was I got home, I waxed the board up, I'm so excited, like it's my first brand new surfboard ever, like it's always done secondhand or hand-me-downs or whatever. I'm so excited. I get it out the surf and as soon as I hit the water I'm like, oh, like something not right here. As soon as I started to paddle this board, it was harder to paddle than my 7.6. I got up on it was a clean day. I was out at Kira. I got up on a couple of waves and it was just super skittish. It wasn't me. And I came in after a few waves and I was just devastated. Like,
you've spent the money on the new board, you're excited for it.
I spent all that money and, you know, promised it was going to be easier and it was not. It was a lot harder than my 7.6. So anyway, I rang the surf shop. It took me weeks to get a hold of someone and so I called finally someone gets back to me. He's like, no, just keep riding it, you know, you'll be right.
But it's you, it's not the board.
Yeah, he's like, and I just was gutted. Like, it was the biggest kick to my confidence and I really believed, oh, it's me, like there's something wrong with me, there's something, my surfing isn't as good as what I think it is, I'm not ready. Like, I just went into this spiral of negative sort of talk. And then I went out and bought like a 9 foot foamy just for $500. I didn't want to spend any more money. I just went out, grabbed another foamy, just went, whatever, I'm just going to keep surfing the foamy. I don't really care. Like, you know, I'll get in it. So then a few more weeks and then I thought, what's wrong with that board? Like, why, what is it? Like, obviously surf okay. Like, I was cleaning up on that foamy. So I was like,
yeah, so yeah,
this wasn't my surfing.
So, eliminate that out of the equation. Yep.
Yeah, so then I was like, what is it? I started to go, what is it about that board? And I started researching. And when I started researching, I came across Richard Harvey on the Gold Coast running these 5 days learn to shape a board, any board. Mm-hmm. And so I went along to Richard and like the first day I got in that bay and he just started explaining things. She said, what do you want to shape? I said, I think I want a longboard. I want an easy paddle. I just started talking all these things that I now know you do with a shaper. Like, this is how going to a shaper works. You tell them your pain and they fix it. Right? Yep. So I go in there, you know, I tell him I've had this really rough experience. He's all very attentive. And then he starts talking me through the shaping process. And the course sort of went over 5 days. And so the first day was all about these dynamics And I just was like, my mind was blown. Like, it was, what are you talking about? Like, it was, to me, there was length, thickness, and width, and color. And color is the most important.
And no talk about volume or anything like that at that stage?
No, like, no talk. No, like, well, I'm in two minds about the volume conversation. I'll come back to that.
Okay.
There's like in my brain when I entered that bay and I entered that conversation, first conversation with Richard, I thought there's length, width, volume, you know, the length, thickness, width, you know, and that they were the things that when you went.
Basic standard measurements.
They were the standard things. And then after that first day and that conversation with Richard, there's 65 things, more than 65, 65 things that they can customize into a board.
Wow.
And my brain just blew. Like, I was like, what? Like, it just couldn't, I couldn't get my head around that there were all these things. And not only that, that there were these things that they customize to make you a better surfer. And I just went, what are they? What are these? What are those things? I want to know what they are.
Yeah.
And then what are the things that I need? Like, it just, it was like this whole part of surfing had, that I'd never crossed before and I'd never even heard about. And I can't help but wonder how and why. Like, I just, all those years and coming in and out and different people, and how has that conversation never crossed my path?
Yeah. At that point, you still thought, like, just thinking about shaping a board for yourself and knowledge for yourself, not thinking about how other people might experience the same thing that you are.
I'm not even thinking that I'll ever shape another board again. I'm thinking that I'll shape one board and that'll be it. Like, I've entered the bay. He's told me all this stuff. My brain is just gone boom. And then I went home that night, and then I went back the next day, and I was asleep by 7 o'clock every night. My brain, I was so...
Information overload.
I was so like, what? Like, it's like I got this download of information and my brain just started going tick, 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 tick. So, you know, what does that mean? Like, just so much. It was just so exciting, and it was, I could feel like a switch inside. I could feel a light being turned on inside of me.
Yeah.
That just went, wow. Like, I became, the obsession started on in that first
moment.
And I got to day five, so I went through, and then like rails. I didn't, what are rails? Like,
and the shapes, yeah.
What the so it's sort of like I got to those things, yeah, and my mind was blown. He started calling me, well, after about my second or third board, I think he said, he started calling me Alice. And I said, why are you calling me Alice? He said, oh, Alice in Wonderland, you've gone down the rabbit hole. There's no
And I think that's a good thing. Yeah.
Yeah, because I got that first board, and then all I could think, then I got it in the water, and then I tested it, and then it was, you know, all the things that we talked about happened in the water. So he'd be like, okay, Jill, we're going to add this in here because you're looking for that easier paddle. You know, we're going to add this in here because you need that stability. We're going to add this length in here. Okay, you know, what kind of turns do you like to do? Tell me about the kind of surf. I said, well, you know, I don't really like going out in anything 5 foot plus. Like, so,
yeah.
Okay, we're going to do this to the board. So all these things that came into it. And then when I got that board then into the water and went, wow, like an immediate turnaround.
And it did exactly what you wanted it to do and what you expected it to do.
And what it did is it filled the gaps, and as every board should, it should fill the gaps or the weaknesses in your surfing and take your surfing to the next level. So if you go and you get on a new board, and like I did, and it makes my surfing worse, you know, that is not the right board for me.
Right.
So the whole key around shaping is to match the person to the board, to the conditions that they serve. That's the magic trifecta. So, you know, your every board, that every new board that you get should be improving your surfing, should be making you a better surfer. So, and shapers can do that. They can watch you. I see people out in the surf all of the time. I'm looking at people in the surf and I just go, oh, if they just tweak this, that would be a whole nother experience for that person.
Yeah.
Turning like longboards as well. So I worked out later on down the track after I shaped a few boards, and the board that I originally bought is what they call a high performance longboard.
Yep.
So, and I love high performance longboards. I've shaped one since and I love it. But that particular board was designed for 5 foot plus waves. So it's only going to get its kick on when it's up to speed and it's got some volume to the wave. So if you're surfing 2 and 3 foot, whatever,
it's going to sink.
It's just not going to do what it's been designed to do. You know, it's a great surfboard, wrong surfer, wrong condition. So they only got one of the three. So when the young bloke went to sell that to me, and, you know, this is probably the warning out there for all the women and men.
Yeah.
You know, the warning is that, you know, be clear when you enter that shop, whether it's a shaper or a shop, about what your ability is, you know, what you're surfing in, and make sure that that person you're speaking to knows that what those boards and what they're suited to.
I think with a shaper as well, you've got to have a relationship versus just going into a random store. At least if you're going to see a shaper, I think I would feel a whole lot more comfortable about my weaknesses in my surfing to be able to say to you, this is where I'm seeing, and if you've come down to the water watch as well, that would be amazing. But being able to speak that truth rather than going into a store with someone that you don't necessarily know or haven't built a relationship or a rapport with can make a huge difference to the outcome.
Oh, look, if you love surfing, like I love surfing. I love it. I want to be on whatever's going to bring me the most amount of fun. Now, the person who's going to help me the most with that is going to be the shaper. You know, they're the person. It's like you know, and you know, custom shaped boards compared to board short boards. Look, there's a whole bunch of models out there that. You know, the bigger companies have narrowed down and said, look, these are our best five, or, you know, these are our best five or six. There's nothing wrong with those. They've tested them, they've put them through the miles, you know, but you've got to find which one is right for you, which one is right for your conditions. But the more local you can get, the better. You know, I've taken boards that I've shaped to surf in, you know, in Kira and Rainbow. Take those same boards down just over the border in New South Wales to Cabarita.
Yep.
They don't surf the same. Like, it's a steeper wave at Cabba, it's a faster wave. You know, I need a board that matches the conditions. So,
yeah.
You know, and that's why they all talk about, you know, having a quiver.
I was going to say, this is where the quiver obsession comes in. And it's sometimes, I think, people looking from the outside into the surfing world, especially when you see the high performance professionals, have got like 30 boards in their quiver. You can understand why they do when they surf at so many different places around the world. And when we're talking about high end, we're talking like Mick Fanning and Lane Beachley, if you've seen her collection. Like, they're all suited to the individual waves, to that person and the way they surf, because you can have two people that are exactly the same surfing the same waves, but still have slight differences in the way they surf.
Oh, look, I'm a big one on that too. I've narrowed down to, I've got kind of two boards in our local area that I move between that I've fallen in love with, but I put somebody else, you know, as my shaping's developing and I'm more interested in shaping for other people and getting that sort of a bit more nailed. I put somebody on one of the boards that I love and watched her sort of flail a bit on the paddling. And I've just, and it was for that moment and for that day, it was her board position. She was sitting a little bit too far back. You've got to find your right position on the board to make it, you know, for the optimum. But it's just that reminder, like, it's, it's, you know, what was my perfect board? It's not necessarily your perfect board, you know, or your mate's perfect board. Like it's, yeah, it's such an individual thing.
So when you're looking at somebody like that, like you see someone on one of your boards, do you look at height, weight distribution, and do you actually work with coaches as well? So if you've got, if you're watching somebody and they've been coached by someone, are you able to converse with them and say, where do they need to change their foot position, or where, like you said, do they need to be further up on the board, and how do I interpret that?
So I'm not that far along the shaping journey. So I would still consider myself to be what I call a baby shaper. So there's I've only entered I only entered the bay like last year. So I'm still what we call a baby shaper. Great. And all my boards are still looked over by Richard. I hope that one day that would be so cool to partner up with a coach, watch somebody and then go, oh, let's tweak this, let's tweak that. So it's just, I'm not at that stage yet.
Where do you hope to take the business?
Oh.
Big question, Jill.
I know. Look, I think when I, because it grew so organically, like when I started, I went looking for a solution for me. Like I wasn't really, I didn't set out and go, I'd like to be a shaper. Like I stepped into the bay looking for an answer to a problem that I had, and I found that answer. Mm. And then something else opened up to me, and it continues to open up to me. So I keep going back and doing more and more and more boards. What has me absolutely fascinated is board design. So exactly what we've been talking about. It's finding those magical things that enhance what's going on in the water, so that I can tweak something in a board that's going to tweak your experience in the water. That's got me super, super fascinated. So for now it's, and the other half of that is the education component. Like how many women out there, or men, anyone, like how many people out there walk into a board shop and get told by somebody that because they've gone from a 7'6" to a 9', that the 9' is going to be an easier paddler? Like length has got nothing to do with easier paddling.
No.
That easier paddling, where you've got your thickness is your buoyancy, so and then your width is your stability. Yeah. So, you know, the length doesn't even get a look in. So,
so do you think that we need to be educating, for example, for me, so I'm a surf coach, but I'm only relatively new as well. So I've been doing it for 2 years now. So for me, I'm just picking up on things that I've learned for myself, but also on what I've heard other people saying. So do you think there needs to be more education of surf coaches and people who want to learn that sort of skill? So that,
100%. Like I think it's just education of everyone in general. Like we're seeing this explosion in the industry, and that's what you were talking about. Like last years has been this insane amount of people entering the water.
Yeah.
And for the first time ever, we've got people entering the water with no surf culture or mentors around them. So, you know, there's a lot of girls that have entered, same reason I have, gone in for fitness, you know, picked it up, loved it, loved the culture, loved the community, you know, and I've really sort of jumped in boots and all, and it's fantastic for all of us to have that diversity and have all these people come in and love it. But they come without anyone to ask anything, like, you know, until they cross a coach, you know, or anyone. So I don't want anyone else to walk into a shop and spend nearly $2,000 on a new board and then be told afterwards,
it's the wrong board.
Yeah, it's the wrong board. Like we need just a little bit of knowledge, enough knowledge, or getting people to the right people, you know, building that community and getting that support and getting our mentors in the industry sharing that knowledge and getting it out there. So I had to search hard to find that stuff. And then when I heard it, it's often, I sometimes call it man speak. Like it's said in such a way that it doesn't make sense to your average surfer.
Yeah.
It's something unique. I think when I hit the bay and started shaping is I was I was an older woman and an average surfer at best.
Right.
So 18 months on, I'm more than competent in the surf now, you know, not getting any younger, but, you know, I just, that little bit of knowledge and having the right board has just increased my surfing tenfold. I'm faster, I know more about what I'm doing, I can feel the different dynamics in the board underneath me. You know, we don't all have to be shapers to gain that benefit. You know, you just have to find the right board and also just get a bit more understanding about what things do what in the water so you know what to look for. Yeah.
Very, very good point. Would you consider mentoring down the track? Do you think that's something that would be part of?
I feel like anyone, I think we've all got a responsibility if you've got some kind of knowledge in the industry. And, you know, my knowledge is small. I've been lucky enough to fall across Richard Harvey, who's just got encyclopedic knowledge. You know, that's one of the veterans shapers. And that knowledge is getting passed down to me. I feel extremely privileged. You know, I'm hand shaping longboards. I don't know whether I'll hand shape forever. Like it may be at some point I turn to moving to some other type of shaping or making boards. But for now, it's the art of hand shaping that's got me hooked. But that knowledge being passed down from him to me is golden, and I feel quite privileged to have that. And I also feel, I guess, a special responsibility to share that.
Share that, yeah. And
particularly with women, you know, particularly because it is, you know, it's not been an easy run for women in the surf.
No.
You know, so it's, you know, all the help we can get. And one thing women are good at doing is building community. We're awesome at it. You know, we're really.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, so 100%, like, I feel a responsibility. And now that I've got this knowledge, like, you know, you can hear it when I speak. Like, it's just
passion
bursting out of me. Like, I'm just like, I want to
get people share
and shake them and go, do you know this? Like, it's so exciting. It's, you know, I can watch somebody and surf and go, oh, just change this and this. And, you know, your surfing's going to go through the roof. Like my partner actually we're in a bit of a role reversal situation to the norm. Like my partner took up surfing 18 months ago, so he again was quite strong in the water, but he took to surfing over COVID with another 500,000 people.
Yep.
If you saw him surf today, and there's video footage on my Instagram, people can go through and have a look at it, but if you saw him surfing, like, nobody in the surf believes that he started 18 months ago. Like, he started, and that's been, I think, well, A, he's got the absolute stoke, like, he's obsessed with it.
Yeah.
And surf, you know, almost every day. But it's been, I've tweaked those boards. So I've watched him and gone, right, so my first board I shaped for me, board number two I shaped for him.
Yeah.
And then he rode that board, I think, for a good 6 months, built his confidence up. And then we went, right, this is the next board. And then this is the next board. So I think he's three boards in now in 18 months. And yeah, if you saw his surfing, you would not believe that that was somebody who started 18 months ago. You wouldn't be able to tell.
So that's a possibility for everybody. That's not just
a possibility for everybody. Yeah. You get the right board. Match to you, match to the conditions, your surfing's going to improve. Like, and that's what, you know, it doesn't have to be shaped by me. It can be shaped by anyone. You know, go into the shaper and ask that, have those conversations. They're probably sitting in the surf with you and you don't even realize. Like, if you see those shapers and they're
ask like questions.
Because that's somebody who's watching you surf, right? So as he's progressed, I've gone, right, at the beginning you need thickness here, you need the width here, you need this nose dimension, you need this amount of rocker, you need this amount of concave. So I'm building this amount into the tail. This is going to turn here, going to do that, this type of fin. So I've customized that to go, right, for where you're at, I know you, I know how you surf, this is what we're going to put you on. And then about a few months ago, I looked and I went, we're actually surfing Cabarita, fastest super wave. I'm cleaning up. I'm having a blast out there. Look over at him. He's sort of like, his surfing's all right, but it's not great.
Yeah.
Changed the board out, took off. Like he needed more speed. He needed more ability to turn, you know, just loosening up that board from the beginner board that he had. Just took him from that beginner through the intermediate level. So, you know, it's, whereas the reverse could have happened. He could have gone out and bought that board that I bought at the start and then gone, oh, well, I'm not as good a surfer, I thought, you know.
Yeah, and lost the passion for it.
And lost the passion or, you know, or just taken a lot longer to get good.
Yeah. What would you say your biggest challenge has been? Have you shaped a board that you've been really disappointed in?
Yeah. There's... and that's actually probably the board that I learnt the most on.
The way though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Like it's, you know, you like to think, and even still, like it's, I don't know if it's, but I've got a couple of boards that I just think are perfect for me, but you're always tweaking. Like Harv says that as well. He's been in that bay for 50 years and he's like, no, you never find the perfect board. And there's a few, I had somebody comment on Instagram one day and say, oh, you know, you're chasing the perfect board. It's a descent to hell. You can get close. where were we? Oh, it's called,
biggest challenge.
Oh, challenge. Yeah. So the biggest challenge, look, I did have a board that, that wasn't great. So I took it out in surf and just the paddle on, it was just not making it over waves. So I've told that story a few times actually, and people have just been like, God, I wonder if that's my board. Like I'm having trouble getting over waves. And it could be, that can be a design flaw in a board. So I created a board, I think it was like my fourth board I'd shaped, and you know, all excited. You wait a long time, you get through glassing, and it's not cheap either. Like we've got to, it's not cheap to keep making boards. So get it out in the water, and I could not paddle this thing. It would not. And when I got onto waves, it would stop. Like I'd be on the wave, and it would stop on the wave, and I'd be falling off the back, going, "Oh God!" So. And again, like I have my little tanny and I'm like, nobody likes a bad surf.
So, yeah.
And there's such great conditions. You don't want to waste a good surf either. So anyway, I had a conversation with Harves and he was like, check this, check that. Like it was, you know, has it got a bend here? Has it got this? That? Like, and it had all the things that he said. I was like, yep, it's got, like, so it was just a bad board. So that, you know, that was a bit challenging. The challenge, it seems a bit fickle. The challenge is going to be financial, I think. This is the hardest thing when you get into shaping and you've got to make all these boards until you start selling them, you know, getting lots and lots of boards out there. It's quite expensive to get into. It's going to be the challenge, I think, for our women of the future who want to get into shaping.
Yeah.
Is how do we make that pathway a little bit easier to get into?
So that they can make money from it, make it a sustainable business.
Yeah, and just affordable to get into. Like it's, it's sort of like, there's, I guess, a bit of an onus on the industry there to make sure that they're taking in apprentices. I know there's a few around. There's a few women coming through. And I know McTavish has got one at the moment. There are a few coming through, but there really is a bit of an onus on the industry to help women to keep shaping and to, you know, be able to work on boards.
I think that comes back to education though as well. So educating the population or educating surfers in the benefits, like we've just been talking about, of going and speaking to your shaper.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I'm well supported by, you know, lots of people, and you know, it's I realize I'm rare at this stage. There'll be more women coming through, but at this stage there's very few female handshakers in the industry, even worldwide, because I specialize at the moment in longboards. You know, they're very, very few. And there's people, I've got a list of people just waiting for boards, you know, which
that's a great thing.
It's fantastic. Yeah. So well supported. So I can see that. But it's a journey. It takes a long time to learn, long time to get good at. I'm lucky I've got halves looking over every single board. You know, nothing leaves the bay without him casting an eye over it. You know,
yeah.
Sure it's meeting all the things it should. So
So your advice would be to women who are thinking about getting into it,
find a mentor. They're out there and they're so keen. You know, the surfing industry got fast. It started pumping out boards from factories and bringing in overseas imports, and all of a sudden, like we've done across the board, we all want to slow down. We understand the true cost of having fast product now, you know.
Yeah.
We're eating off handmade, we're shopping more locally at markets, you know, we're trying to be more sustainable around things, you know, that crosses into our industry. We've sort of gone through this peak where, you know, everything was fast and
mass and produced.
Sort of coming back to slower, and, you know, hand-shaped fits with that, you know. There's so many, you know, those old boys out there that are still hand-shaping and have got that knowledge. Find them, like
talk to them.
It's just so got it. Yeah. And they're really, you find the right one. Like there's always a few of the old boys that aren't so female friendly.
Yeah.
You know? So that's okay. It's not their journey, but you know, just find those people and yeah, get in and just get started in whatever way you can.
Very cool. One last question that I have around this is what do you have to do to protect your health when you're a shaper, because you're breathing in the fumes and you're around?
So I hand my glassing over, so you don't have to be, and I cop a little bit of flack from that because people are like, you're not a real shaper if you're not glassing your own boards.
Oh, really?
Well, it's one of those things. I don't know whether it's, I don't buy into any of that either way.
Yep.
So yeah, I'm not doing glassing. The foam dust isn't too bad. It's a bit like sand. Like you kick it around like we're wearing masks, but you know, that stuff I'd say is not too toxic. The more toxic stuff is in the glassing bay, like when they get into the fiber glassing, and that's more fumey. So for myself, it's not really something other than wearing the mask and the shaking bay.
Yeah.
So that's enough, sufficient for my needs. Yeah. Cause it's, as I mentioned, like my whole interest and the whole art form for me is in the board design and getting the board, you know, that's a piece of foam. It feels like a sculpture to me. So, you know, I'm finessing and finishing all that off, and then I'm handing it over for glassing. I'm just not interested in glassing at this stage. Yeah.
Fair enough. So some of your heart and soul goes into every one of your boards?
Oh, 100%. You got, it's just that concept. Like when you get a blank, it's all rough and, you know, you're putting your idea, this whole concept that you've got in your brain. It's got to get laid out into that board, and then to see it translate into the surf is incredible thing. But yeah, you when you're hand shaping, without a doubt, like your hands are over every inch of that board.
You know, every curve.
And you know, that's part of that learning to shape, is understanding to see the lines and see the shapes and see the curves and things in the board. So, your hands go over it a million times, you know, and all that excitement and the different stages. There's definite stages in shaping, from sort of cutting it out to using the planer, down to the hand tools, down to the fine sanding, down, you know, right to the end. So, you know, your hands go, and then your hands are sweeping over. Halves put my hand on the board. I can still remember that. He put my hand on the board. I was about day three on that first workshop, and then he goes, look at this, and he turned it over, and you could see where the shaping dust had parted to where my hand was feeling the board, and he just grabbed my hand and he just said, this, Jill, he said, this is what you listen to. He said, you feel with your hands, you're using your eyes, but you're feeling with your hands. So every part of that board, your hands going back and forth, feeling. And the same thing when you translate it into the water, you're feeling what you've carved into that. So if I'm looking for a board to turn in a particular way, I've shaped something very specific into that board to give it a certain feel and a certain soul.
So, yeah,
you know, particularly on nose riders as well, which have the, you know, the concave get shaped in. So
yeah,
I can feel when I'm stepping out, I can feel the lift that's coming from having the concave lift.
Yeah.
So I can feel those dynamics. You know, and the rails, like the rails of the beard. It was for a long time I was working on the nose of the board going. Yeah, so then getting the board into the water and feeling all of those dynamics sort of come to life is that's where the addiction comes in.
Yeah, it's palpable. Like I can feel and see just how passionate you are about that. So, you've convinced me I'm not going to be buying boards from anywhere but from Shapers. You've convinced me, like I, like... Yeah, it's going to make the world of difference knowing that you're on a board that somebody has specifically made for your purpose, yeah. Like for the way you want
to. Everybody has. I used to think that the things that I had, the problems I was having or the difficulties that I was having in the surf was universal. But, you know, that's not necessarily the case. We all have our different things. So, you know, for some people, and they're often the questions I get asked in surf, you know, for some people it is the paddle on, you know, getting onto the, they're not getting onto the wave. And sure, there's things like positioning and the things that, like the coaches that can teach you, but there's also, you know, things we can put into a board to help with that. You know, there's a very definite paddle section on a board. So, and again, it may be height, weight, ratio, all those kind of things as well, to make sure that the section underneath where you're paddling is designed for you to paddle. Like yeah. You may be sitting in another spot that's designed for turning or nose riding or doing something different. So it's sort of tweaking those things. And, you know, every now and then you come across a board like most people would in their lifetimes. You come across a board and the whole board just sings. Everything comes together, you know, and you want to hold that board for 100 years. Yeah,
absolutely. Where can people find you if they want to get into your wait list?
So the best contact for me is on Instagram at the moment. So, and I'm also blogging pretty regularly about boards and dynamics and different experiences. So on Instagram, it's Shaped by She.
Yep.
And same for the website, so shapedbyshe.com. So
you get on the mailing list so you can get that blog each time it comes out.
The blog, yeah, and just follow along on Instagram and just reach out to me, like anyone that's got any questions or, you know, starts to think, oh, maybe there's this, that or whatever happening with their boards. I've helped quite a few people buy secondhand boards, you know.
That's a very good point, yeah.
And looking for a new board and just don't have anyone to ask. Like it's, you know, it's perfectly fine. Just send through a few pics of what you're looking at. And I can pretty much look at a board and go, oh, this one's designed to do this.
Yeah.
Boards are designed for specific things. So, you know, you want to be able to read that board and go, oh, that board's designed for this. Is that what you're after? So.
Very cool. Thank you very much for being here with me today, Jill.
You're so welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Amongst the Waves. I would love for you to leave your review on Apple Podcasts. Reviews help increase our rankings, let more people listen to the podcast, and share the love.